It is Monday, May the 9th, 2011. Time for another official Gerwick.net podcast. I am Steve Gerwick along with Adam Fairfax, and another round of interesting news tidbits to get into. We're going to talk a lot of WWE and TNA news today, and I'd like to welcome back Adam Fairfax.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve. Like always, we've got a lot of news to cover, a lot of things going on in the world of professional wrestling. And first off, I'd like to start out by saying a happy belated Mother's Day to any mothers that are out there listening or anyone who happens to have a mother. Happy Mother's Day to all of you, and we've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, I like to echo those thoughts as well. Definitely happy Mother's Day to any mother out there that's listening to our podcast. And if you are, we do appreciate it. That's pretty cool. I guess we got a lot of things to discuss, as usual, as we were saying up front. Probably one of the more controversial things we saw the last week took place on Tuesday night. It was two nights after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And I think a lot of people were surprised that Christian was actually given the title, the World Championship title, at the pay-per-view. And then two nights later, at the SmackDown tapings, Christian lost the title to Randy Orton. There were some comments made by Joey Styles and Randy Orton alluding to it. And then even Chris Jericho came out and said, you know, don't criticize the angle till you see where it goes. I guess maybe first off, are you surprised, A, they gave Christian the title, and where do you see this angle going now that Randy Orton is once again the World Heavyweight Champion?
Well, you know, I was surprised that they gave Christian the title to begin with. When we did our podcast talking about the draft, I said I wouldn't be surprised if Del Rio won the title at Extreme Rules and took it to Raw. So, you know, even though I wasn't looking forward to that happening, I was surprised that Christian got the title, but I thought it was a good thing. I was pleasantly surprised. I've been a big Christian fan for a long time. The guy's got boatloads of charisma and talent. You know, he main evented TNA, won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship over there. And ever since he's come back to WWE, we always thought, you know, what he could do if he was given that opportunity to be in that main event level. And then we saw, of course, Edge go down. So it was perfect timing for Christian to step up and finally claim his spot at the top of the WWE mountain. So I was quite surprised that it finally actually happened. Excuse me. And then we see just a few short days later that Randy Orton, you know, who was just, of course, drafted over to SmackDown, comes out and he wins the World Heavyweight title, takes it right from Christian. So I don't know. Where's this angle going? I don't know. I mean, I don't know where you can take it. I don't know. You know, Christian, to me, Christian, and obviously the number one thing that's been a knock against him is his size, and that's pretty much the number one thing that's held him back in World Wrestling Entertainment. But to me, Randy Orton is the super face who's over. Have him come in and have him just come close, you know, come as close as he possibly can to where you think he's going to win the title, and then Christian somehow cheats and sneaks away with the championship. The NWA / WCW did it for years with Ric Flair, and I think that Christian is the perfect candidate, you know, in this new age of professional wrestling to carry that torch, if you will, but it doesn't look like they're going that way. I don't know. I'd like to talk to Chris Jericho and pick his brain a little bit and find out where this angle's going, because I don't know. Just bizarre.
You know, what's weird to me is, you know, I don't want to get on talking about, you know, on this podcast that we're just all negative, that we're going to just criticize WWE. Because the first thing I want to do is I definitely want to give WWE some credit for giving Christian the championship, because I definitely think he deserved it. You talked about his TNA reigns down in Orlando, and it's kind of interesting that he lost the title, the World Heavyweight title in Orlando at the tapings there. I thought that was kind of odd irony, I guess you would say. But I'm glad he got the championship, even if it was for 2 days. It was obviously not the shortest championship reign, which is a dubious distinction to avoid. But I just, you know, I totally scratched my head. You know, I was just grasping at straws of trying to figure out what they're trying to do here. I don't understand what the point of giving him the championship was if they're going to pull it off him in 2 days. I definitely think that a Christian chasing the championship could be a money type program if they really push Christian. But you know, I was talking to people, you know, after the title switch, and the one thing I was told was, you know, if Christian would have held the championship, he would have been booked as a very weak champion, such as The Miz was when he, you know, first won that championship. So in some ways, would you rather be a weak champion, or would you rather drop the title and then maybe chase the championship? I guess that's something to think about, because I think it's obvious, Adam, that Vince McMahon definitely has a grudge against Christian. We've heard it for so long, the way he departed WWE and jumped to TNA, that he's never considered Christian a main event type player, even though his partner Edge became, you know, a great WWE champion. But it just seems to me that they never want to give Christian the ball. And even though he may be involved in the title picture with Randy Orton initially, I just don't see him ever getting the title again. I think this is going to be his one time they gave him the championship. Maybe it's two to maybe quiet some of the critics that says, hey, I gave him the championship. What, you know, what do you want me to do? But I just don't think WWE sees him as a main event type player, and I think this might be one and done for Christian as far as the World Heavyweight Championship goes.
Yeah, I hate to agree with that, but in a lot of ways I do. I think that, you know, I think that they've got to come out and decide clear cut how things are going to be. Is Christian a heel? Is he a face right now? Is Randy Orton a heel? Is he a face right now? To have a face champion, I mean, by the reaction that Randy Orton got from the crowd, I mean, obviously he's a face, and, you know, to have a heel champion, if Christian's going to be the heel, or excuse me, to have a heel challenger, Christian's going to play that heel role in chasing the title. It just, I don't think personally it works that way. It worked that way with Hulk Hogan, but that was when you fed him monsters. You know, now in today's, you know, day, if Christian is the champion and he's the heel and Randy Orton is the face, and the face needs to chase the champion, the face needs to chase the heel, and the heel somehow always, you know, finds a way to hold on to that title. And then for your big payoff, the big payday, the heel, you know, somehow he cheats, but it doesn't work, and the face wins and he's the champion. I mean, take a look back. Let's rewind to 1990, the Great American Bash, Ric Flair and Sting. It was the perfect setup. Ric Flair had been the champion and had found a way to hold on to the title for months, and then Sting finally won the title. I think that that's one of the most simple, pure wrestling angles that you can come up with, and it works. It's proven that it works. So I would have liked to see Christian hold on to the title and then maybe Randy Orton chase him around, but now that they've switched things, I don't see Christian really, you know, I don't see him winning the title again, and I don't know. I don't know where he goes from here. Of course, the rumor was that Christian was going to go into a program with Mark Henry. So, yeah, I mean, you know, to have that on top, that's not going to draw, you know, that's not going to draw flies, if you know what I'm saying. So, I don't know. Randy Orton doesn't really need the title, in my opinion. I mean, the guy's over. He's been over for a long time now. He's obviously number two to John Cena as far as, you know, the majority of the fans' opinion is concerned, and WWE itself, you know, they obviously look at Randy Orton as the number two superstar. So he doesn't need the title, in my opinion, but they didn't really consult me when they booked a match. So
they did? They didn't give you a call?
They didn't, no. I was waiting for him. I was waiting for it, and no, never heard from him.
You know, a couple more things, and we'll move on. I definitely think Christian makes a better heel. I would hope that at some point they will turn him heel, especially the SmackDown side. It's very weak on the heel side. You were talking, you know, Mark Henry was rumored to get the shot against Christian, which I'm glad, at least from that perspective. I don't want to see Mark Henry in the title picture. He just doesn't belong there. You got Sheamus. You've got Wade Barrett. Looks like I just think of that mix. I'd like to throw Christian in the heel mix and then make that heel side a little bit stronger. So maybe somewhere down the line they'll do that. And I think you make a really good point with the old, I don't know, wrestling 101 booking, old school booking, where you have the heel as the champ. I mean, look at Ric Flair all those times. He was the world champion. He was the heel. And then you had a baby face finally beat him like a Dusty Rhodes. Just that old school booking of putting the title on the heel for a long time, and then the baby face gets the payoff, gets the championship. I like that. And now, as you look at things, you've got John Cena as your WWE champion, you have Randy Orton your SmackDown or World Heavyweight Champion. So it's number one and two, as you were saying, and you've got two baby faces with the world titles. And that also pretty much means that every pay-per-view you're going to have, it's going to be John Cena in the main event, and it's going to be Randy Orton in the main event, which I guess is good from the perspective at least they're away from each other, because we've seen those guys wrestle each other for so many times. But I don't know. I just get kind of tired of Randy Orton, John Cena, Randy Orton, John Cena. And you pretty much guarantee what those guys have in the championships, that they'll be defending their titles as the main event and co-main event at a number of pay-per-views coming up. So I'd like to see a little more creativity from the WWE creative booking staff.
Yeah, it can't last forever, unfortunately. You know, I'll try and stay positive here, and I'll say, you know, John Cena is certainly over. He's a drawing champion. He's drawing money. He's drawing people. That's great. I'll give him his due, and I'll say the same for Randy Orton, but it can't last forever. You know, we saw it go on with Savage and Hogan in the 80s and then into the 90s, and, of course, they jumped over to WCW, but then, you know, WCW continued to use them the same way as these two top baby faces, and it just got old. You know, Hulk Hogan will undoubtedly go down in the history of professional wrestling as the Babe Ruth of professional wrestling, but, you know, his character got stale and it got old, and the same for Savage. So as good as Randy Orton and John Cena both are, if they don't do something you know, to change these guys up just a little bit, if we continue to see them on top in the same kind of feuds and use the same ways, it can't last forever. And maybe, you know, you mentioned guys like Wade Barrett and Sheamus, and I know that the WWE is on their big youth movement kick, so maybe that was their thinking in having Randy Orton take the title from Christian and having Randy Orton work with guys like Wade Barrett and Sheamus, because I can certainly see you know, programs with both of those two. So maybe that's what they were thinking. You know, Orton's a younger guy and he's over to, you know, pretty much the max. So maybe we'll put him, you know, put the title on him and we'll have him work with Sheamus and Wade Barrett and help elevate some of these younger guys. But I can only hope so.
You were saying before, and I agree with the point you made, Randy Orton doesn't need a championship title belt. I agree with that. And I definitely think John Cena, of course, the top babyface, doesn't need the world championship. But again, you know, you got both champions, and hopefully maybe one of these guys will be transitional to a new champion being pushed into the mix, because the main event mix in WWE is kind of stale, and they need to really kind of spice it up a little bit. So we'll see which way they go. Speaking of main event players, we got word this week that WWE's been talking to their partners, and they're definitely going to keep The Miz in the mix. He should be, and he would have been an interesting guy, I think, move to SmackDown as well, because the SmackDown side is so weak on the heel side. But The Miz has, I think, definitely earned his spot, and all indications going forward is that The Miz will be a main event player moving forward on the Raw brand in WWE.
I think that's a good thing. I think The Miz surprised a lot of people with his, you know, his title reign and how over that it was. The guy's definitely an effective heel. He's found a way to, you know, translate, you know, that charisma that he's got and become effective. And he's gotten over. And I think that it's a good thing that he's going to remain in the upper echelon, if you will, in the main event picture. I think that's where he belongs. I don't know that I would have taken the title off him so soon. I don't think that John Cena needs the championship, like we just said. You know, same with Randy Orton there. I would have liked to see maybe The Miz hold on to the title for a little bit longer and then kind of move away from his John Cena feud and maybe put someone else in that position and help elevate them. The title should be used to help elevate new stars at this point in time. You know, the titles don't mean as much as they used to. We've all agreed upon that. And that's not being negative. That's just the truth. The titles don't mean as much as they used to, but the World Heavyweight title and the WWE Championship can still be used effectively to get younger stars over. So if you put, and you know, I don't know who they put in that position, but if you move John Cena out of there and The Miz remains champion and stays on top, maybe put him in, you know, some short feuds, maybe a feud with John Morrison. I think that would have been, you know, a natural, you know, after their tag team and all that, their history together. So I don't know. I would like to see him hold on to the title for a little bit longer, but I'm happy to know that he'll continue to be up and around that main event spot.
Yeah, I think going forward, you got a couple of interesting – I mean, obviously they're going towards Morrison, R-Truth as a feud with R-Truth turning heel. But I think in the future, if you can get the title off Cena, because I don't think – I don't see the point of Cena holding the title from now until WrestleMania to go into the Rock's match because at WrestleMania, because obviously I don't think the Rock versus John Cena needs the championship involved. So I think moving forward, once you do the Rock – or excuse me, the Morrison – and R-Truth program, then I think that's some interesting dynamics because I think you can, if you can keep Killings hot as a heel, you can do John Cena versus Ron Killings. And then if the Miz can get the title back, then you could do the Miz versus John Morrison, who I think has elevated his game as well. So I think that if they just play things out the way they're currently going, and then obviously at some point you're going to do Cena versus Alberto Del Rio is the rumored main event for SummerSlam. But again, you know, with the roster shakeup and the draft, there's some potentially interesting feuds currently on the Raw side.
Yeah, there are, and I would love to see John Cena and Ron Killings feud. I think that you know, that would play out perfectly, and I think that they really have an opportunity to help push these guys and truly get them ready for those spots. Ron Killings and John Morrison both. John Morrison, we see him. Excuse me. He teeters near that top spot, you know, where he's going to break through, and we see him in the main event, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, he gets pushed back down. So, I would certainly like to see him, you know, maybe up in that category with the main event guys, and work a feud with the Miz. And I think that there's endless things that you could do. You know, you could turn John Morrison, in my opinion, is a guy that can be a face, but he can just as easily be a heel. You can flip him back and forth very easily. So. You know, I think you could see the Miz and John Morrison feud for a while, but then I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, have each other's back and Morrison turn heel. And I don't know. There's a lot of exciting things going on the Raw brand right now and leading towards SummerSlam. They've got to get something in the works. You know, SummerSlam's a big show. It's the second biggest show of the year. And I mean, you know, I don't think that they booked their SummerSlam main event the day after SummerSlam last year, so they've got to get something worked out. And if it's going to be Cena and Alberto Del Rio, then I think that's going to be a great main event. I'm a big fan of Alberto Del Rio, and you know, I don't know. There's a lot that they can do right now. There's a lot. There's a lot of guys that were, you know, they were toiling in that mid-card spot, but now we see them all of a sudden, you know, making ground at R-Truth and John Morrison. So. Hopefully they can continue and, you know, we can continue to get these guys over.
Well, we're doing this podcast in the morning, and we're getting some breaking news as we're speaking here. John Morrison via his Twitter page just said, I am about to get an operation to fix my neck. I will return. And I was just going to mention to you, it's odd that will come up like that, but I was going to mention to you over the weekend there was some rumblings that John Morrison is hurt. It wasn't sure. It was unclear the reports I was getting if it was the neck or the shoulder, but it looks like it's his neck and he's going to need surgery. So the only thing I can say short term is hopefully it's nothing, you know, a major injury, but that may, if this is, you know, if this is what's really going on right now, this will probably delay the R-Truth Morrison program, which is tough for Morrison. It's also tough for R-Truth because obviously they just turned him heel. And this was going to be his first feud, so, boy, just talk about some bad timing.
Yeah, it is bad timing, but I think that there's some salvageable aspects of this. I think maybe they could, I know that they're both heels, but maybe they could put R-Truth and Del Rio in the semi-main at SummerSlam, and they can say, you know, Alberto and R-Truth can both say that they're gunning for a shot at John Cena. And maybe, just maybe, you could do Cena versus Miz again at SummerSlam, have the Miz go over, and then maybe the next night on Raw, John Morrison makes his return. I don't know how long he's going to be out for. I certainly wish him a speedy recovery. Anytime anything happens with a guy's neck, it's kind of a scary thing. You know, we just saw Edge retire, and that was, you know, stemming from neck problems. So I hope that it's nothing serious, but you know, this could be an opportunity. Take him off TV for a while, give the guy a break, and, you know, maybe it could set up the perfect angle between John Morrison and The Miz, and have The Miz go over for the title at SummerSlam, and John Morrison shows up the next night, and there we go.
I tell you, they got to hire you as a booker, Adam. Some pretty good ideas there, especially now that, like I said, one of the feuds that they've definitely set up for the summer would have been R-Truth and Morrison. So we'll see which way they go. Obviously, we're taping this prior to Monday Night Raw for May the 9th. But speaking of injuries, kind of a easy transition to talk about The Undertaker. And we've known for a while now that The Undertaker is very, very hurt, very sore, obviously working the type of physical matches that he's had over the years, taking wreaking havoc on his body. And we know that he's not feeling well. And we just saw Michelle McCool lose what was originally supposed to be a loser leave SmackDown match, changed to a loser leave WWE match, so that Michelle McCool, obviously his wife, could go home and be with Undertaker, who's now totally off the road, not really considered part of the roster right now because they just don't have any plans for him because he's injured. But we could really be seeing at WrestleMania next year, if he's, you know, able and willing to go, the final match for The Undertaker and probably an opportunity for him to go 20-0, perfect streak for WrestleMania. So I guess, Adam, it looks like a sad ending to his career, but I mean, on the other hand, this guy has had one of those phenomenal careers in WWE, has the streak that everybody would love to have. And I guess going forward, you know, heading into WrestleMania next year, who do you see as the ideal opponent for The Undertaker?
Well, you know, as far as his opponent goes, it's got to be somebody big. If this is going to be the last hurrah, and really, you know, I don't think any of us should be that surprised that this will be it for The Undertaker. You know, the guy's going to be, this will mark 20-0, and that means that he's been in the world, you know, World Wrestling Entertainment / Federation for, you know, just over, you know, about 20 years. And the guy worked before that in WCW for a few years and bounced around Memphis. So the guy's been around for quite a long time. So it's not really any surprise to me that this will probably be the end for him. And I've heard Michelle McCool say things about, you know, wanting to start a family with The Undertaker. So it looks like they might be, you know, entertaining the idea of having children, which good for them. You know, that's great. And I just think that they've got to make sure that this, I don't want to see The Undertaker and Triple H too. If this is going to be the end, then, you know, it's got to be big. He's got to go out with a bang. And right now, I don't see anyone on the roster right now that, you know, that really fits that role. I mean, of course, it would be huge for any number of young superstars' careers to have that final match with The Undertaker, you know, his big 20-0, his big 20th win. But I don't see anyone, like I say, on the current roster right now. I don't know who it could be. It's got to be a big match feel. You know, we've heard rumblings and rumors about Steve Austin coming back for maybe one more match, but I don't think that's really the match for him to take because obviously The Undertaker's going to go over. I don't know. I don't know who fits that position right now, but I really hope that it's not Triple H. And not that I don't think they could have another great match. I just think that it's got to be something even bigger. So I don't know. Who do you see in that position?
Yeah, it's interesting. I totally agree with Adam. I do not want to see Triple H versus Undertaker 2, which would really be 3 because it would actually be the third meeting at WrestleMania. Of course, the most interesting and intriguing name will probably come up again next year, Adam, would be Sting.
There you go. There you go. So, if they can make it happen, it would be perfect. And things come out to say that there were certainly negotiations between both sides. And I don't know. I don't know what they have to do to get Sting to sign that contract, but I think that would be perfect. Even if it was a one-shot, you know, a one-match deal where he just comes in for that WrestleMania spot, I don't think it does anything to tarnish Sting's career to come in to WWE to do the job for The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But, you know, part of Sting's guarantee with TNA that, you know, brought him back to the company was the condition that he would win the world title. So I don't know if his ego is at a point right now that, you know, he'd be willing to come in and do the job, but I think it would be great. I think it would be big You know, if you had Undertaker and Sting and you had John Cena and The Rock, I mean, you know, it would certainly be one of the bigger WrestleManias as far as that WrestleMania big time feel is concerned in the last number of years. So I don't know.
You know, I know you do a lot of commenting on the Gerwig.net comment sections. Under each individual post, at the bottom of every post, there's a comment section. And one of the most interesting things, I tell you, there's been a lot of discussion about Sting. You know, should he stay? Should he go? Would be a hypocrite if he would jump? All kinds of interesting dynamics. But the one that really, I always got a chuckle on when I would read, would be that, why would Sting want to agree to come in and lose to The Undertaker? And it's just like, in 2011, these guys are main event superstar Hall of Famers. Does anybody think that Sting coming in and losing to The Undertaker diminishes his career? I mean, to me, it would only elevate it that you came in and you find the one crowning achievement to your career, because you've done everything you possibly could do in this career. Other than you obviously having a major run in the WWE with the WWE Championship, would be to come in and do a program with The Undertaker, which would be just a money feud. And to anybody that would suggest that, well, why would Sting want to come in and lose to The Undertaker? I would think, and I remember Kevin Nash saying this before when he first returned, because they asked him about Sting. You know, what if Sting comes in and does a program with The Undertaker? And he said he'd be crazy not to. So, I mean, if you're offered this spot, you take it. And I just find it very funny and that people would suggest, you know, why would Sting want to come in and lose to The Undertaker? It's like, why wouldn't you? Because, you know, it would be a huge paycheck. You come in, you can get your Legends deal, you can get a DVD made, you go in the Hall of Fame, and you go out with a bang.
Absolutely. I think it's a fitting end to a great career for both guys. You know, both guys, their careers have kind of mirrored each other. You know, of course, The Undertaker did get his start on the national level in WCW for those first few years, but then he's predominantly been a WWE guy. I mean, he's been there for, you know, 20 years. So Sting kind of has that mirror image in WCW and now what, you know, a lot of people are calling WCW TNA. But their careers have kind of mirrored each other. And, you know, for the last, oh, gosh, it's been about 15 years now, Sting's had that dark, you know, that dark kind of character. So I think it would be perfect. My only concern would be at this point in his career, if Sting could, you know, if The Undertaker is as banged up as everybody's saying, you know, could Sting carry him to a great match, you know, which is really a minor detail at this point in time, especially with WWE getting away from professional wrestling altogether. But yeah, I think it'd be huge. I think it would be great. And maybe that's something that they had in mind. Maybe, you know, maybe that's something that Sting had in mind with, you know, with his negotiations with WWE, that, you know, maybe 20-0 means a little bit more than 19-0. So I don't know. I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah,
I think it would be great. Yeah.
The only thing when you plan it that way, you don't know if somebody could get hurt. You know, obviously Sting has returned to the ring now for TNA, and I think it's obvious when you see him in TNA, he's very limited what he can do. So I think from a physical standpoint, I'm not sure Sting could pull it off. And I know that's what some people have also said, that maybe that's the reason Sting didn't agree to the Undertaker match this year, was that he didn't think he could physically do it. Because obviously, if you're going to do a match with Undertaker at WrestleMania, it's got to be a great match. It's got to be a very physical match. And maybe he felt his limitations at that point would not allow him to compete against The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll wait and see. I agree with Adam, though. I don't see anybody currently on the current roster that would really jump out at me and say this would be the ideal opponent for Undertaker, because obviously almost everybody on the roster, he's already wrestled. I mean, we talked about the possibility of Undertaker versus Wade Barrett last year, or for this year's WrestleMania, but they'd have to really build up Wade Barrett, and they're going kind of in the wrong direction, in my opinion, with him, as far as building him up as a major player. I'd like to see him get away from the core and really push him as a single star. But on another topic, and I guess maybe sticking with the WCW theme, and Sting's former tag team partner, Lex Luger, has announced that he is now working with World Wrestling Entertainment. Now, this one, boy, I don't even know where to start with this one. He's working in the WWE wellness program. He's consulting wrestlers on nutrition and a variety of keeping yourself in shape and taking care of yourself. I guess the obvious angles here is that Lex Luger was dating Miss Elizabeth at the time of her death. WWE really buried her, or buried him, I should say, on that WWE Confidential show back with Mean Gene Okerlund. They really went after Lex Luger. And obviously Lex Luger is a steroid user, has been known to use recreational drugs, has been known to use painkillers. Of course, there was that bust on his home back in I think it was 2003 after the Miss Elizabeth death. So this one has a very interesting dynamics here, but I guess maybe you might have a different perspective on that.
Well, I mean, if I can, I just want to mention something real quick, too, if I
sure.
can go back just a second, about the Undertaker thing, and I don't want to get into it, but other than that little clip that we saw on YouTube, I think there was a lot more negotiations behind the scenes and talk with Brock Lesnar. So I think that could be another huge
right.
match for WrestleMania 20. And I don't think it's that far off. You know, people say that it'll never happen. Brock Lesnar will never work a match again. But the fact that Dana White and Vince McMahon both, you know, let that happen with The Undertaker and Brock, that little confrontation that they had, spoke that there had to certainly be some kind of negotiations going on behind the scenes. So I don't think that, especially with a year in advance to iron things out, I don't think that's too far off either. But Lex Luger, you know, what can we say about the guy? You know, he certainly has, you know, he certainly, I've said it before, and I think that it really rings true in that Lex Luger has done so much, and it's not all a good thing, but he's done so much to change the perception of how a professional wrestler looks. You know, sure, you had guys like the Road Warriors, and you had big, brawny, muscular guys before Luger, but Lex Luger was really the first guy that came out on a national stage and got a big push because of his appearance. And that's the number one thing that brought Lex Luger to the top. It certainly wasn't his in-ring ability or his mic skills. You know, the guy was pushed because of the way that he looked. And now we fast forward 20 years later, and, you know, would Lex Luger really stand out like he did back then? Now, all of these guys look exactly the same, and that's the look that they want. That's the look that, you know, WWE goes for. So in a lot of ways, like I say, Lex Luger was the first guy to come out and get that push because of the way that he looked, and he really changed the way professional wrestlers' appearance and, you know, how people were pushed based on their appearances. So for Luger to be in this position, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like saying TNA has hired Jeff Hardy to, to oversee their wellness policy. Luger's had numerous run-ins with the law. You know, before Liz unfortunately passed away, there had been, domestic abuse kind of situations going on there. And, you know, the guy got busted with an ungodly amount of drugs and, you know, they got him with the intent to distribute. That's the number one thing right there. You know, you say, you've got all this stuff in your house. This isn't just for you, you know, and these guys are, you know, they're selling it. So Lex Luger basically is a guy who had been out of the limelight for a while, and the last I saw Lex was on TNA, and I'd seen him work for World Wrestling All-Stars, that Andrew McManus promotion based out of Australia, and the guy didn't look so great. You know, he'd put on some pounds. But since then, you know, we saw, unfortunately, the passing of Liz, and at one point in time, a few years ago, something had happened with Lex, and he was temporarily paralyzed. I don't know if you remember that. He was
yes,
in San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the guy was in a wheelchair. You know, I mean, how does that happen? But supposedly Lex Luger has, he's appeared on the 700 Club, and supposedly, you know, he's good buddies with Sting. We all know that he's found religion. And, you know, whatever your stance on that is, you know, that's fine. But supposedly he's found religion and cleaned his act up and turned his life around a little bit. And if that's the case, then I think this is something good. It's good for Lex Luger. It's something productive that he can do, Lex Luger, I mean, any number of guys. I just finished Chris Jericho's first book, and he talks about, you know, run-ins with Lex Luger in the back, and any number of guys will tell you that Lex Luger, you know, was basically a jerk backstage. You know, the guy didn't want to be there. He was there for the money. He didn't have a passion for wrestling. You know, he was there to collect a paycheck. He was the first guy that had an agent when he negotiated his contract, you know, which is another revolutionary thing, because now everybody has an agent. But he didn't really care or have a passion for professional wrestling. So if now he's in a position to help these younger guys, and you know, I mean, obviously this guy's got to know a thing or two about passing drug tests and things like that, because he obviously was on steroids for years. But if he's there to help these younger guys and mentor them and hopefully help them kind of steer clear of some of the paths that he took in his own personal life, then I think it can be a good thing and a productive thing. And it's a way for him to finally give back to a business that gave him so much, you know, and so much that he took. It's a way for him to give back. So hopefully Luger's clean and straight and is using this opportunity to do some good. And if that's the case, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, that, I would agree with that. I hope that he's cleaned up himself, that he can be a positive role model for some of the other younger wrestlers that are coming up. That, you know, obviously, as you said, he knows what he's talking about in terms of some of the demons that he went through. So hopefully, as you said, hopefully he's straightened up. The only thing I would say would be, I'm sure it could come up in terms of your investors conference call. Somebody could ask. Obviously, WWE is a publicly traded company. Say, you know, the wellness policy is all about, you know, getting people off drugs, and yet you bring in a known drug user, a steroid abuser, not to rhyme purposely, but, so that might be an interesting, I mean, obviously the last conference call, somebody asked Vince McMahon about purchasing TNA. So obviously if you listen to some of the conference calls, it's not just a, you know, business investors, it's people that are professional wrestling fans that understand the business aspect of professional wrestling, even though they don't consider themselves really in the professional wrestling business per se, into the sports entertainment genre. But at the same time, you could be asked, hey Vince, how do you justify hiring a known drug user, you know, a guy who's admitted to using steroids to be a part of the wellness policy or program? So that's the only thing I would say on the negative side of that one. And I agree, like I said, I agree with you. Hopefully for Lex Luger and really for the WWE, hopefully he's turned it around and he can be a good counselor for the WWE talent. And let's go on to TNA. And let me warn people up front here, Adam, because we're going to get into the spoilers. This coming Impact on May the 12th was taped last week, so we already know the results. And there were a couple of interesting tidbits that we want to get into, a couple of one return to TNA, somebody's been out of the mix for a while, and then one that really threw me for a curveball, which we'll talk about in a minute. But let's get to Chris Harris returning to TNA. Obviously, the last we saw him was Braden Walker in ECW. We know the stint there was not a successful run. I think two things happened. One was he was out of shape, and obviously when you're given the name Braden Walker, a very generic name, that, you know, he had the kind of the deck stacked against him initially, especially they put you on ECW, not one of the top brands. So I guess what's your thoughts on TNA bringing back Wildcat Chris Harris?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I've always been a big fan of Wildcat Chris Harris, dating back to the original days of TNA and the Wednesday night pay-per-views. I can remember when they put Chris Harris and James Storm together. There was no America's Most Wanted at that point in time. They just threw these two guys together. They were both kind of generic indie workers, wrestlers, if you will, and they just kind of threw these guys together as a tag team one week. And then it just stuck. And of course, they developed America's Most Wanted. And these guys just had some of the greatest matches that I think I've ever seen, you know, to be honest with you, and some of the greatest matches certainly in the last 10 years, you know, there are classic battles with the Disciples of the New Church and with Triple X, and just some great things that that these guys did. And I've heard it said that Chris Harris's number one, you know, obstacle that's been in his path is his attitude. You know, I guess if he left TNA, it didn't have anything to do with money. Him going to WWE wasn't a money-driven thing, but rather than his attitude, I guess that in his eyes he wanted to be the TNA, or I guess at the time the NWA World Champion. He felt that he was at that level. I think that AMW was something 7 times NWA Tag Team Champions, and you know, he felt that he should be at that level. And right before he left TNA, the first time they had split up America's Most Wanted, and Chris Harris and James Sword had a classic match on Impact. I can't remember what it was leading up to. I believe Slammiversary pay-per-view, but they just had one of the greatest matches that I've ever seen on television. And, you know, the guy looked like he was ready to take that next step and break through that glass ceiling. And I can remember the match that Kurt Angle won the TNA World title for the first time at Slammiversary in the King of the Mountain match. Chris Harris came out and was involved in that match. And Jim Cornette, who was the, you know, figurehead of TNA at the time, came out and said, you know, there are no glass ceilings in TNA, and I'm going to prove that, and I'm putting Chris Harris in this match. And the guy just looked great. And then all of a sudden, we found out that he's going to WWE, and, you know, at the time, it was kind of like, oh, man, you know, I hate to see him leave TNA because there's just so much opportunity for him here, and what's WWE going to do with him? You know, how are they going to market him? What's going to happen with this guy? And, of course, he signs with WWE, and he was under contract for quite a while before they put him on TV. And he came out as Braden Walker, and the guy did look just, you know, he just kind of looked lousy. He looked out of shape, just slow, just like he wasn't, you know, what his heart wasn't into it. And I think maybe it wasn't. You know, you go from main eventing TNA pay-per-views with Kurt Angle and everyone in the top spots of TNA to coming out, to signing with WWE and then not being on TV, not appearing in any capacity for months, and then you come out as a generic Braden Walker. They said that they came up with the name about 20 minutes before he actually made his way out to the ring. So, you know, I can see where maybe the guy had a little bit of a bad attitude in WWE, but simply main eventing in TNA obviously doesn't guarantee you, you know, a push in WWE. I think Christian is the perfect example of that. So I think a combination of being out of shape and a bad attitude is what was the nail in the coffin for Chris Harris and his WWE career. I thought for sure as soon as he was released from WWE that he would make his return to TNA. In fact, oh goodness, it's been a few years now, but it was just after he had been released from WWE. I was at a TNA house show event in Cincinnati at the Cincinnati Gardens, and Chris Harris was there. He was sitting about, 15, 20 feet from me, and James Storm had come up, and they were hanging out, and I thought for sure, I sent you an email, actually, and I said, hey, Chris Harris is here. I don't know if he's coming back or what, and then actually after the show, as we're driving, driving from the arena, we stopped at a red light, and there's Chris Harris and James Storm in the car next to us. So those guys have obviously maintained a friendship despite working for different companies. And now finally Chris Harris is coming back, and he's coming back in the perfect angle. They're doing something right. For all the negative things that can be said about TNA, they're finally doing something right. And I don't think Matt Hardy necessarily needs to be in the picture, but Matt Hardy's challenging Beer Money, and he says he's bringing his, he's got a surprise partner. And the surprise partner is perfect. It is, indeed, Chris Harris. So Chris Harris is going to come back to face his former America's Most Wanted partner in James Storm. And, of course, James Storm's new tag team with Robert Roode, Beer Money, which is, you know, hugely over. It's one of the most over acts in TNA. So I think that this thing could really play out very well, and I think it could be a big program for TNA.
It's interesting because The current plan, and of course we know with booking in today's professional wrestling that they change their minds quite often, but the current plan as of things stands right now would be to reunite Chris Harris and James Storm as a tag team, America's Most Wanted, and to break Robert Roode away from Beer Money, which I would agree is kind of a big risk because Beer Money is one of the most over things they have in TNA. But, you know, is it time for Robert Roode to break away and get a singles push? Because obviously they need more, I think, more talent in terms of singles guys in the main event mix. You know, it's maybe you don't see Robert Roode as a main event guy, but I think he could definitely climb the ladder and get there if they gave him the right push. And again, all of it depends on what kind of push they give him. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on Robert Roode, you know, breaking away from Beer Money and maybe eventually being a title contender in TNA?
Well, I think it's certainly time for that to happen. If you remember way back to Team Canada when they broke up, they gave Robert Roode a pretty strong singles push, but at that point in time, you know, I mean, that was a good 4 years ago, and I think that Robert Roode was, he was a younger guy back then, and he wasn't quite ready to go out on his own and make that step to the next level. They paired him with Tracy Brooks, and he was the head of Robert Roode Enterprises or something like that. They gave him a kind of million-dollar man type gimmick.
Yes. Yeah,
I just don't think he was quite ready for it. And I think now, you know, he certainly can do it in the ring. I think he's one of the best young workers that TNA has. And I say young, I mean, you know, we've said it before. These guys, they were young, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. But now's the time for them to be pushed to that next spot. Because if you don't do it now, then time's going to pass them by. And eventually, you know, I've heard rumblings that Robert Roode has negotiated with WWE in the past. So I think that you've gotta push this guy. And I think something that TNA really needs to do is really push that television title, they're calling it now. It was the Global Championship and the Legends Championship. Maybe get a new belt created altogether, but really push a secondary championship, a TV title, and really make that be a stepping stone. Make it be what the Intercontinental title used to be to the World Championship and WWE, and that being the secondary championship and the first step in making that, you know, long trip to the top. I think that if they went ahead and who's the TV champion right now? It's Phil Shatter, Gunnar. I think they should strip him of the title and kind of do it quietly and not mention it, and then maybe put together a TV championship tournament and have a new belt created, obviously, and really use some of these mid-card guys like a Robert Roode and some of the rest of the guys in Fortune and book a very strong tournament and have Robert Roode have him win it out, and he can be right at that semi-main event level, and then, you know, maybe work a program with a guy like Rob Van Dam or Mr. Anderson. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit for Robert Roode. I think he's got a world of potential. He's a great heel, but he can also play a pretty good face. I just saw last week on Impact, you know, Robert Roode, it was on the microphone. He's getting into it with Hulk Hogan, and he had me sold. I was convinced. He's a great talent, and I hope that they use him appropriately.
You have confidence that that Vince Russo is going to book a tournament and actually have a logical winner out of it?
Well, I'm still waiting on TNA to call me as well. You know, I was hoping that maybe I could help them book the tournament. So WWE didn't call, so, you know, the line's open. TNA, if you're listening, Dixie Carter, if you're listening, you know, I'll take Knockout's wage to do the job, and, you know, we'll get it done.
In the case of TNA, I definitely can tell you they're listening and they're watching. So, yeah, definitely throw that out there that Adam Fairfax is available. You know, just give him a call and I'm sure they can work something out with him there. So, but going back to Vince Russo, something that had Vince Russo all over it when I saw it was that TNA has hired China. Now, speaking of demons and boy, last I seen China was on that Celebrity Rehab show on VH1, and I actually watched this whole season because she was on it and kind of had a wrestling, you know, cover it with wrestling, as I did with the year Stacy Keibler was on Dancing with the Stars. Although this particular season, after watching a whole season of Dancing with the Stars, I couldn't do it again. Even with Chris Jericho, and I like Chris Jericho, I just couldn't watch a whole season of it. But I did watch the whole season of Celebrity Rehab, and of course, at the end of Celebrity Rehab, she's, you know, reformed, or she's on the right path, and then we hear that she's, you know, collapsed, and unfortunately that happens a lot. You know, obviously we've seen this happen with Scott Hall, but I don't know, when I saw that TNA has hired Chyna, you know, it had Vince Russo's name written all over it, and I don't know, does Chyna's name mean anything anymore? I would have thought if Chyna would come back to professional wrestling, and it's interesting too, TMZ loves Chyna. And in fact, the article they were talking about that TNA has not yet offered her a contract that she's working on a per nightly basis, which is kind of mind boggling with the state of professional wrestling. But they have they just have it for her, and they put that she's a wrestling legend, Chyna. I thought that was kind of funny. But all of a sudden now they bring her really kind of out of nowhere, because we haven't heard anything about Chyna. She's hinted that she could get a deal with the Nokies group in Japan, a one-year contract, and obviously if it paid anything, she'd probably go there. But now Chyna is in TNA, and I guess, I don't know, I just scratched my head. I think of all the girls that are out there that could, you know, use a bump, you know, bump them up a little bit, and yet they go back to Chyna?
Yeah, I'm a little confused by it as well, and you know, I thought first, you know, when I heard that they hadn't offered her a contract and she was working on a per-date deal, I thought that was good for TNA because it'd be easy for them to get out of it. But then I also thought, wait a second, that could be disastrous for TNA because they're obviously pushing her in a pretty heavy angle with Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett and Karen Angle, Jarrett, whatever you want to call her. You know, for China's track record and the kind of recreational things that she likes to do, for the fact that she's working on a per date deal, they can push her to the main event spot and you know, maybe she goes on a binge and she doesn't show up to the next pay-per-view. She could certainly do a Scott Hall. Scott Hall's done that to TNA before. So the fact that she's not locked in and, you know, working on that per date deal, she could really screw things up for them, and how bad would that look after we saw the Jeff Hardy debacle, and we've seen, you know, Scott Hall miss dates that he was advertised for pay-per-views. But I think we've seen Jeff Hardy do that. He said that he's gonna, you know, he's been booked to work pay-per-views for TNA and then not shown up. So I don't know. I don't know what Chyna brings to the table at this point in her career. She's kind of a Lex Luger in WWE situation, in that I hope that Chyna has turned things around. Chyna clearly, and you know, I mean, it's something that she's got to somehow figure out a way to get over it. But Chyna clearly, you know, I've got a lot of, I don't know, empathy for Chyna, for Joni Lauer, and the fact that, you know, she was with Triple H and the whole Stephanie McMahon thing happened kind of behind her back. And she was, you know, she was doing well. She was at the top of WWE. They had pushed her strong for years, and then when it was finally outed that Stephanie and Triple H were together, you know, Chyna got all the backlash from that. You know, pretty much her entire life was flipped upside down, and I have a lot of sympathy for her in the fact that, you know, everything in her life changed in such a short period. You know, I don't sympathize with her coping mechanisms, but you know, I hope that she can turn things around, and I hope that this is an opportunity for her to, you know, to maybe right some of those wrongs and to do something again in the wrestling business, because she was a pretty talented lady. I mean, you know, you don't get over and stay over in WWE for as long as she did, you know, without being talented. So I hope that this can be an opportunity for her to turn things around. But again, I mean, I think it could be, you know, another one of those situations where we see, you know, we see her show up and then all of a sudden, you know, she disappears, and it's scary. You know, it's not good. And I hope that this doesn't mean that we're going to see Sean Waltman show up anytime soon either.
Oh,
but, you know, it's TNA, so.
It's TNA, boy.
So who knows? But It was supposedly going to be Isis the Amazon or Alawisha or whatever you want to call her, the lady giant that was going to come in and be Kurt Angle's mistress. And then, of course, I think we were all shocked. It was certainly a surprise.
Yeah, the 6'9" Amazon they were going to bring into the NXT season, and then they ended up just dropping her altogether. And that would have been – I don't know if I would have been gangho about that idea, but – I don't know, just bringing back China now. Like I said, I think if China would come back to WWE, it would have been somewhat of a story, but TNA, it just reeks of being real desperate to me. And I agree with your assessment, too, with going back to her WWE run there, where, remember, she was starting to wrestle the guys. And, you know, really, once you move her into that realm where she's wrestling the men, you really can't move her back to wrestling the females, because obviously they book her that way, and that's what really, I think, kind of took her career right off the tracks, because, you know, there's really no going back. You know, she won the Intercontinental Champion from Jeff Jarrett. Interesting there. Because if you remember when Double J was leaving at one time to go to WCW, he was still the Intercontinental Champion, and then we know about Jim Ross didn't cover his contract correctly, and then they wanted Jeff Jarrett to lose to China, to drop the IC title to China. So Jeff Jarrett held up Jim Ross, Vince McMahon, WWE for a big paycheck, which I know caused a lot of friction between Jeff Jarrett and World Wrestling Federation at that time. So interesting to see that, you know. And the thing I thought too when I saw her name, maybe Jeff Jarrett wants that win back. You think?
That could be the case.
You know, losing to China maybe didn't set well with Double J, and he wants to beat her in the ring now. So
that could certainly be the case. She's not coming up through a trap door in the middle of the ring, a la, you know, the Warrior in WCW. You know,
just one of those dynamics that jump in your head when you see it happen. Let's move on a little bit. Let's talk about Kurt Angle. Just announced on his Twitter page that he is – well, I guess he's already pretty much put out that he's not going to go to WWE. He's going to stay with TNA, multi-year contract. The only question I have with the way he goes, can he really last two or three more years at the rate he's going?
I don't know. I think it was for like 3.5 years that his new contract is for. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I don't know that you know, the guys – you know, say what you want about Kurt Angle, and I know that he's had a lot of personal problems over the last few years, but, I mean, the guy is a machine, and, you know, there's rumblings and rumors of him talking about competing at the next Olympics, the 2012 Olympics. So, you know, I think that my number one concern would be Kurt Angle's mental health situation and the fact that, you know, the guy is – he's had some problems. We've seen the DUI stuff and just some irrational behavior. So, you know, I don't know. Can he hold out for another 3 years? I think he can if he's used properly. I mean, I don't think Kurt Angle needs to go out, and he's kind of gotten to the point where he doesn't need to work every single Impact. He doesn't need to work the house shows and that kind of thing. And but I don't know. I mean, as long as his mental health state is at a good point, then I think that, you know, there's no reason that he can't go for another 5-10 years. But
he's got to cut down those crazy bumps.
Yeah, he's got to adapt. He's got to change his style in the ring a little bit. You know, I mean, how many neck surgeries has the guy had? You know, he's gonna have a remote control neck here pretty soon. He's gonna, you know, he's gonna have to push a button to turn his head from, you know, from one angle to the next. So, I mean, he's got to do something and tone down his in-ring style, you know, at least a little bit. But I think it's good. I'm happy to see Kurt Angle staying, but I don't know that WWE would be interested in him, you know, had they the opportunity. I don't know that he's somebody that they would go after right now anyhow, just because of all of his erratical, you know, behavior and just, you know, his track record in the last few years. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good thing for TNA because obviously Kurt Angle is, you know, a phenomenal talent. But at the same time, you know, he's claiming that he's making more money in TNA than he would be or did or could in WWE. So for them to have that weight on their checkbook, you know, I don't know. Is Kurt Angle worth it? I'm not so sure.
I think I totally agree with you. You when you look at the guy as a talent, there's no doubt that he's one of the top talents in professional wrestling today. He as far as from a work rate perspective, he's just outstanding. But on the same, on the flip side of that, as you said, you made the investment into Kurt Angle, and part of his contract may be paid by Spike TV. I'm not sure about that because they have definitely helped with some of the bigger contracts, you know, going back a few years. But so, but again, if you keep Kurt Angle, what that does is it eliminates a roster spot or a high roster spot for somebody that could potentially get into that spot where somebody's elevated. Because I think, you know, keep pushing Jeff Jarrett and keep pushing Kurt Angle. You know, these guys are pretty much at the end of their careers. It's time to elevate somebody, as you said before, like Robert Roode, you know, get him into that title picture and move him into the mix. Because we've seen variations of Kurt Angle with all the top stars. You know, we've seen the Sting feud. And it's just time to break it up a little bit. So by signing him, that kind of prevents somebody from getting elevated unless Kurt's really willing to help some of the younger talent out, and maybe is. And if that's the case, that's great, because really they need to get other people into the top echelon mix of TNA. And as we say TNA, I guess as of this Thursday, TNA is no more.
That's right. TNA is now going to be known as Impact Wrestling. At least I think. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of fanfare to this, at least not as much as I thought there would be. You know, a company, you know, taking into consideration that TNA is kind of Bush League when compared to WWE. I mean, I don't say that as a knock. TNA has a long way to go. I think that they should be the first ones to realize that. But the way that this angle is being played out, it just, to me, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of, I don't know, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of hype. I don't know what's going to change about things. I know that they've registered for the domain name Impact Wrestling, and you know, I mean, we're going to see it play out on Thursday night. But I thought for sure that this would be something that was on a much more significant scale, that we'd see this implemented in some kind of big way. But it looks like it's not going to happen that way. It's going to happen on Impact next week, and I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
I just don't see, what's changed? I mean, so you call TNA Impact Wrestling. I mean, the show's been known as Impact for how long? So, I mean, what really changes? I mean, do they expect fans rather than chanting TNA to chant IW? I mean, like you said, you know, fans are not very excited. What should I be excited about? I mean, they're still going to be in the Impact Zone. They're still going to be in Orlando. They're probably still going to run majority of their shows in Orlando. They're still going to be taped, the stupid tape format. I mean, we're talking about a show they taped last Tuesday night coming up for this Thursday. They do that. They have those weeks where they tape 3 weeks. They tape Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, I mean, they tape weeks in advance. It's going to be the same roster. It's going to be the same management. It's going to be the same announcers. The TV show stays the name, retains the name Impact, I guess. I don't know what changes. I mean, you can drop those initials, and I would agree that TNA is not a name that's definitely caught on. But Impact Wrestling, I mean, I'm glad it's a wrestling. It's not Impact Entertainment, but I don't see anything that really changes there. I mean, what you rebranded, but what is it? I mean, from an average wrestling fan that maybe is considering watching Impact or watching Impact more, what really changes? Why am I getting excited about TNA going to Impact Wrestling? I just don't see, any positives coming from it.
No, there's really not. I mean, nothing has changed. I'll say that I want to give it a chance and see how it plays out, but from reading the spoilers, you know, I mean, it simply just seems that, you know, I mean, Mick Foley comes out and cuts a promo and says this is going to be known as Impact Wrestling. So I don't know where they're even heading with this angle. I don't know how they're going to do things. I think that, you know, it clearly makes sense to sort of rebrand the company, and especially in the fact that WWE has decided to simply be known as WWE now, and they want to, you know, stray away from that professional wrestling, you know, kind of stigma. the name pro wrestling, you know. So it makes sense for them to rebrand themselves as Impact Wrestling, but they've got to do something, like you say, nothing's changed. Something has to change. They need to, you know, this maybe we'll see this promo come out, and maybe this will be the start of something that's going to lead to something bigger. That's all I can say and hope for, is that this is just the very beginning of something that's going to be played out over the next several months and weeks, and hopefully something big is going to happen. Yeah, definitely. Things have to change. Something has to change. We all know that. We've been saying that for a long time. And to simply just come out and say, no, this is going to be called Impact Wrestling now, and everything stays exactly the same, well, then it's still just TNA at the end of the day. It's still the same exact thing. So, right, something's got to change. I hope that this is just the teaser, and things will certainly, become better. Things will change, but who knows? You know, I think the company needs to go dark for a little while. I think that maybe for a month, maybe skip their tapings, and they need to, maybe show highlight shows and just say, hey, look, something big's coming. We're changing the company. We're rebranding things. We're going to be Impact Wrestling, and stay tuned. And they can show highlights for a month's worth of Impact of all the great, wonderful moments of TNA and everything that's happened over the course of the past 10 years, and just start things new, start things fresh. They need to get out of the Impact Zone, number one, for certain. They have to take the show on the road. I don't mind so much that it's taped. I don't mind so much that it's a live show. You know, Raw used to be taped every week, and then it was taped every other week. And, before the Monday Night Wars of Nitro
years ago,
and Raw,
though. Years ago.
Yeah.
Now,
true.
Now you got the internet. I mean, all their spoil. I mean, I know what's going to happen on this show, per se, and I knew about it 7 days ago.
True.
When Raw would tape 3 or 4 weeks in advance, I mean, the internet was just really starting to take hold. I mean, they could get away with it back then. I mean, unless you read the quote-unquote dirt sheets, you didn't know the results. I mean, you were still surprised on Monday nights. Now, everybody knows these. I mean, as long as you read the internet, you know all the results a week in advance. I don't see the point.
Well, I think as far as the cost goes for them to go live and be outside of the Impact Zone, I think that, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the costs involved with that are. I know that it certainly takes a lot to take the show on the road. So if you've got an opportunity between the two, I'm just saying that I would lean towards taking the show on the road and outside of the Impact Zone. If you can do one or the other, if they can go live and take the show out of the Impact Zone, then great. Number one thing I think that they can do to cut back on money and taking the show on the road is get rid of all the fancy pyro and get rid of all the lights and the staging and all that stuff. It's not necessary. Wrestling was never about any of that stuff for years and years and years. And, you can't compete with WWE on a production level because the money's just not there. So why try and do it? Take that old ECW mentality of accentuating the positives and hiding the negatives. They don't need the pyros and the elaborate entrance sets and all that kind of stuff. It's just not necessary. They don't need it. Have a black curtain and a sign that says TNA or whatever. It's just not necessary. They just have to get out of the Impact Zone. If they have to go live, then go live. If you stay in the Impact Zone, then go live every week. At least give us something. There is no element of surprise, and there's not a lot that, can surprise us in wrestling because everything gets out on the internet. One way or the other, everything gets out. There's really not much that can surprise us in 2011 when it comes to professional wrestling. So, I don't know. I mean, they've got to do something, obviously, and I think the number one thing is that they get out of the Impact Zone, they go live if they can, if it's in the cards for them. And, they got to just change the format of the show. There's just too much talking. There's too much, and I don't know. I don't want to get too negative and go off, too much on TNA or Impact Wrestling, if you will. But if this is the change that they've been talking about that's coming, Mick Foley coming out and saying we're Impact Wrestling now, then obviously a huge letdown. But if this is just the teaser for the big changes that are set to come, then I'm going to sit back patiently and see what they've got in store for us.
I think you alluded, you said something like something's got to change. I just don't buy that. What's going to change? it's still the same people running it. And it's obviously that Vince Russo, and I don't mean just a totally, tear down Vince Russo, because Vince Russo is not the only reason TNA is where it is today, but it's a big reason, because obviously he's the head of creative. He's gotten more power over the course of time, and he has convinced everybody that he created the Attitude Era. He created Stone Cold Steve Austin. He created The Rock. And he's got people around him believing that's the case. Remember, TNA is owned by Money Marks. And the only reason they're still in business is they have money. They have deep pockets. They're willing to, write it off every year. And as long as that stays the way it is, I don't see a lot changing. I think this is the formula that you're going to see. Dixie Carter knows nothing about professional wrestling, and she has bought into what Vince Russo tells her. So that's what you have. I mean, until there's a major falling out between Dixie Carter and Vince Russo, or old man Bob Carter steps in and says, hey, I want to make some money at this. I've been losing money for how many years now? I want to turn a profit, so I'm going to go out, think outside the box, and go out and hire somebody that I think, after going to the interview process and asking around, maybe a guy who can run a company. They had Jerry Jarrett there at one time, and now we know Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett don't get along. That's too bad. Jerry Jarrett could obviously run the company much better than Dixie Carter. I mean, putting Janice Carter in charge of the purse strings ain't going to change a lot, because the same people are booking the company. They still the same mindset, the same philosophy, and until something changes, you can take the show on the road, you can go live every week, but if it's the same mentality, if it's we know what we're doing, we don't want to hear your ideas, Adam Fairfax, because we know what we're doing. I'm Vince Russo. I created the Attitude Era. I created the success of Raw. This is the mentality of TNA, and until that changes, it's going to stay this. You can call – it's like I love Pepsi products, okay? And if Coke tomorrow says we're going to call our product Pepsi, it still tastes like Coke. So, changing the name doesn't mean anything to me. And I know I'm going on a tangent here, but again, until the mentality changes, until the power structure changes, TNA is still going to be TNA. You can call it Impact Wrestling. You can call it WCW. You can call it whatever you want. But at the end of the day, it's still the same company and really going nowhere.
That's very true. And I think that also, you've got to get rid of Bischoff and Hogan as well. I mean,
absolutely.
You want,
yes, absolutely.
These guys have to go. Yeah. I mean, there needs to be a total shakeup. Someone has to get in Dixie's ear and say, we've got to change things. We've got to shake things up. We need, they need to, there's no real captain of the ship in TNA. I don't want to say that, obviously Vince Russo has Bischoff, all these guys have got a certain stigma about them, but at one point in time they were successful and they should receive credit for some success of Nitro and some success of Raw should be accredited towards to Bischoff and to Russo and these guys. But that was 10 years ago. Things have changed an awful lot between now and then, and I'm not so sure that these guys realize that. But there's no captain, and without a captain of the ship, there's no real direction for them to go in. Vince Russo did great things on Raw, but he always had Vince McMahon to oversee everything and give the final say. And Dixie Carter's just not in a position to do that because she just doesn't know. She doesn't know any better, I think. And that's a shame. You have to know better. When you're in charge of a multi-million dollar company, that's got national television, that's a national touring company, not knowing any better, it's not a good enough excuse. Something's got to change, and someone has to take the reins of TNA. It's a company with no direction. Someone needs to take the reins and say, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going. Certainly Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, you guys can contribute, but we got to be on the same page, and we're moving forward in this direction. And if it's not something that you like, then you can take your ink pen and your pad and go home. Yeah, it's clearly the number one problem with TNA is that there is no clear direction. They don't know where they're going. They book things on the fly. I've heard it said a lot of times by a lot of old school promoters and old school bookers that you set a date, and you book backwards. Yep. You know, basically, you say where we want to be in a year, and you book back from there. They don't know where they want to be in 2 weeks, let alone a year from now. They've got no direction. And so he needs to step up and take the reins of the company and say, this is where we're going. This is what we're going to do. You know, TNA, to me, it seemed like that when they were on the verge of, was when we had the Samoa Joe and the Kurt Angle feud, which culminated in the cage match in Boston at Lockdown, you know, a few years back. They were really pushing the product as something legit. You know, it kind of mirrored that UFC mentality of, you know, legit fight sport. And I think that that's something that could, you know, any wrestling company could clearly benefit from. Today, UFC is immensely popular. There you go. You know, book your promotion like that, especially you've got Spike TV, who's super high on UFC and all the successes that the two have had together. Book your promotion, book your company to mirror UFC. You've got the perfect opportunity, at least, or do something. I don't know what it is, but they've got no direction, and they need to find direction. They need to find someone to take the reins of the ship and steer them, you know, in the course of, you know, the direction that they want to go. But they just don't know what that is.
You know, I actually would say probably of the two, WWE and TNA, TNA actually probably books a little further out than WWE. WWE totally books on the fly, and I think that's one of the reasons you see kind of hit and misses with WWE. TNA actually does have some long-term planning. It's just not what people want to see. I mean, they actually have to do 3-4 weeks in advance when they do those television tapings. So they have, of the two companies, I think they book a little further out than WWE, but again, it's just they're not booking what people want to see. They're not booking characters people want to see. They're not booking storylines that people want to see. It just kind of baffles me that Spike TV has been in, you know, in a relationship with TNA for so long, and they've had exactly the same rating every week. It's 1.1, 1.2, 1.0. When does Spike just say, look, guys, I mean, you guys gave this a long run. Why don't you guys change direction? I mean, you can rebrand. You can call it something else. Like I said, you can call Coke Pepsi if you want. But same day, it still tastes like Coke. So, you know, we've invested a lot of money in you. We invested a lot of time in you. We want this relationship to work. You know, there was actually talk that they were talking to Paul Heyman about coming in. If that's what needs to be put in place so that we turn something around, do it. I just don't understand it. We're just going to go along and hope something changes, that this gets hot and people start watching us, and that, well, maybe we'll get a 1.3, maybe we'll get a 1.4. You guys have been going in circles for so long. When does Spike step up and say, look, you know, we're tired of these ratings. If we do something, Do you think we'll change the direction of the company? Do you think the ratings will improve? Yeah, they just go in circles. They make subtle changes here, subtle changes there. But in the end of the day, again, the power structure is the same. The mentality is the same. So they just go in circles and they just expect to, you know, sell this rebranding. Hey guys, it's not TNA anymore. It's Impact Wrestling. Now like us. You know, we're keeping wrestling in the name. The other company's WWE. We know what WWE stands for. Yet it's the same thing. I just don't understand. I mean, when does Spike TV step up? When does Bob Carter step up? When does something truly change in this company? I've been waiting for it for so long, and it just, as I said, you know, giving the checkbook to Janice instead of Dixie really doesn't change anything. We're still in the same boat. You know, I don't really like to be pessimistic all the time about TNA, but they don't give me a lot to be optimistic about. This is just the direction they've gone for so long, and it's the same thing. You know, it's that old adage, you can't polish a turd. And that's really what it is right now.
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again.
Exactly.
And expecting different results. So you're right.
Exactly.
You're dead on.
Yeah. A couple more things about TNA, and we're going to wrap it up. Ric Flair needs rotator cuff surgery. He's postponing it. I don't know about you, Adam, but I grew up watching Ric Flair. I love this guy. This guy was wrestling to me back in the 80s. I mean, I used to watch those Crockett shows, and one of the main things, I mean, they all were jobber matches. They were squash matches, but the thing that I always enjoyed probably the most about those Crockett shows was what Ric Flair was going to say, what he was going to wear, and what kind of promo he was going to talk about. But in this day and age, looking at the way Ric Flair looks, I just don't want to see the guy wrestle anymore.
No, you know, I'll say this. When TNA had first started to do their reaction show, and you know, I thought that was a great show. I gotta say, you know, I really do think. And one thing that was positive about TNA is that I really like that reaction show. And they had a spot filmed with Ric Flair, and he was in the back, and he's lacing his boots up. And I think it was the first time that he was gonna wrestle in TNA. I think. I don't know who his first match was against, but it was when he first came in the company, and you know, he was getting ready to work his first match, and he made a comment about how he was like Bill Hancock, and he was going to ride into town and teach these young guys a thing or two. And I thought it was really effectively done. I thought, you know, for Ric Flair to get in the ring at this point in time, at this point in his career, you know, with the way that he looks. You know, I don't know if it's necessary, but the way that was shot and the way that was presented, I just thought it was very well done. I liked it. And I think that for Ric Flair to be a part of TNA, I think it's a good thing, but I think that Ric Flair has to be used in the right way. You know, why on earth was Ric Flair a part of the Lockdown main event? Why on earth was he wrestling in that match? I'm not saying that Ric Flair should never get involved physically again, but if he ever does get involved physically, it should mean something. It should be a big deal. It should, you know, I mean, it should be, he's Ric Flair. You know what I mean? For God's
sake,
he's the greatest of all time. It should mean something. If Ric Flair, you know, forget the fact that he looks the way that he does and he is as old as he is. You know, we just saw Terry Funk, you know, in WWE just a few years ago at the ECW One Night Stand, you know, and the guy could barely walk. So, Forget the fact that he looks the way that he does and he is as old as he is. Somehow he can still go out there and take these bumps. And he doesn't need to do it on a nightly basis. He doesn't need to do it on a monthly basis. I think maybe every great once in a while, you know, should it be necessary that he goes out and does get involved physically. But it has to mean something, because if it doesn't, how can you be taken seriously? How can a 60-year-old man who looks like he's 60, you know what I mean? Yep. Ric Flair aged pretty graciously up until just a few short years ago, but now Father Time's caught up with the guy and he's looking pretty darn old. You know,
style it and profile in for a lot of years.
Yeah, you know, how can you put this guy out here on TV and it be believable? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, and for Ric Flair, for people to say, oh, Ric Flair's tarnishing his legacy and all this stuff. What the hell is Ric Flair going to do? He hasn't saved a penny, all right? And that's, you know what? We can all sit here and point our fingers at Ric Flair and say, that, you know, that Ric Flair, you know, he should have saved his money, you know, blah, 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 this and that, this and that. He's Ric Flair, like you say, styling and profiling. He wasn't going to live any differently, and he's not going to live any differently now. The guy, you know what I mean? You're talking about living paycheck to paycheck. The guy didn't have a penny. He didn't have a penny saved. He owes money to everybody. And he's still going out, living it up, you know, living the life and partying every night. You know, sometimes something's got to change about that. But, you know, he's Ric Flair. That's who he is. So to say that he's tarnishing his legacy, you know, the guy's got to be involved in professional wrestling one way or the other, because what else on earth is he going to do? And he doesn't have any money. So he's got to make a paycheck. He's got to have a payday. He's got to make money. You know, so use him in the right way. You know, my God, Ric Flair's the greatest, you know, in my opinion, he's the greatest of all time. You've got the greatest of all time. Sure, you know, you don't have the Ric Flair from 83, you know, when he's fighting Harley Race, but you've still got Ric Flair. So use him right. Use him well. But, you know, you've got Vince Russo and you've got Eric Bischoff running things, and neither one of those guys have always been a big fan of Ric Flair. You know, Russo tried to bury him in the desert in Las Vegas, and Eric Bischoff, you know, addressed the entire WWE locker room, said he's going to sue Ric Flair and, you know, sue his family and kick his ass. So I guess, you know, maybe it's insane for any of us to expect him to be used any differently.
Now, you were saying, you know, we were talking about partying and too much styling and profiling. I think too many marriages, too, with Ric Flair. And obviously, his checkbook is depleted. I think the same thing with Hulk Hogan. Obviously, with what happened with Linda Hogan, obviously his wife, his ex-wife now. I think, obviously, he sticks around because he needs the money. And it's unfortunate the guy has made millions and millions of dollars with endorsement deals, with talent contracts. And at the end of the day, despite hip replacement surgery and all the back surgeries he's had, Hulk Hogan is talking about having another match. And I guess we've already kind of see a little bit of a tease with Sting versus Hulk Hogan all over again. I guess it's Starrcade 1997 revisited. Again, I think that's one of the reasons wrong with TNA is that, you know, they're living in the past. I mean, China's 98, 99? And now all of a sudden we're going to go back to Starrcade 97. But it looks like unless something changes and somebody talks him out of it, Hulk Hogan has another match in him.
And who's going to pay to see Hulk Hogan and Sting wrestle in 2011? Oof. You know, I hate to say it, they're two icons in the sport, but who's going to pay to see these two? You know, if Sting doesn't take the opportunity to wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania 20 or WrestleMania whatever next year for the, you know, the 20-0 streak, if Sting doesn't take that chance and he sticks in TNA to wrestle Hulk Hogan at Bound for Glory, you know, in front of, 3,000 people and a 20,000 seat arena, then he's out of his mind, you know, clearly. I'm glad he's found religion because he needs something, clearly out of his mind. Hogan, they get in the ring, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. You know, we just saw him, you know, at least he's walking better now, but for, you know, in the last 6 months, we've seen him, he can hardly walk to the ring. You know, let alone get in the ring and work. So I don't know. I don't know what there is to say about that. You know, if Hogan working drew big money and it was going to be the answer to something, he never would have joined TNA in the first place. He would have continued on with his Hulkamania and Friends tour. Remember they did in Australia about 2 years ago?
Right.
If Hogan at this point in his career working and wrestling drew money, he never would have gone to TNA. He'd have gone back to Vince, or he would have gone out on his own and continued the Hulkamania thing. But obviously, that didn't work, so he went to TNA. So I don't know. I mean, you know, if he wants to go out there and do it, you know, I mean, I just said the same thing about Ric Flair. Forget about how he looks. The guy can still take bumps, and he can still do things in the ring, so let's use him the right way. Well, you know, Hogan looks a little bit better than Flair, but you know, he was never Ric Flair on his best day when he was young and in his prime. And now, with his back and the shape that it is, I just think it's, number one, it's risky. It's a huge risk for him. And number two, you know, it's not going to draw any money. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
And where is it to, you know, I mean, we've seen this year where TNA let Jeff Hardy go out there and try to compete, and obviously in no condition to work. Where is it to TNA to kind of stand up and say, hey, Hogan, I appreciate you want to help us out. You want to do a match. But at the same time, you're just in no condition to work. I mean, does anybody care about the condition of these guys? I mean, we're seeing these guys break down all the time. Well, how about TNA just stand up and say, Hulk, we appreciate what you've done for us. We wanted to work with you a long time. This is great. But at the end of the day, I don't think people want to pay to watch you wrestle at your age, and obviously you have this match and you'll be right back to the surgeon's table the next day.
Well, they've obviously got Dixie Carter and whoever it is in TNA sold on, you know, on Hogan and Bischoff. I'm sure that, you know, Bischoff's like a little bumblebee that's flying around that's buzzing in your ear saying, Hogan's gonna wrestle, you know, he's the greatest of all time, he's so great, he's so wonderful. And then, you know, Hogan's just standing back there nodding his head saying, oh, yeah, brother, you know, I'm the greatest. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I've always said, you know, people have criticized TNA and having, you know, the older guys, you know, and Nash and Sting and these guys being around. And I've always said that if you properly, you know, wrestling's never been about, you know, you had the Crusher and the Bruiser and you had these guys that wrestled, you know, well into the, you know, 60s, you know, and wrestling's never really been about age. It's never been as important as it is now, but if you use these guys properly, then it can be okay. They can help advance, you know, some of these younger guys, but they have no, there's nothing in Hogan or Bischoff that says, I want to help younger guys. Hogan is going to come back to the ring so he can help elevate someone younger. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. I guess Sting's younger, you know.
Not much.
He's 3 or 4 years younger. Yeah.
You know. A few years, but, yeah.
Yeah. Just, I mean, and what's that going to do? I mean, you see Sting and Hogan, and Sting's in a job to Hogan. Is the wrestling world going to see that and Vince say, oh, my God, yes, Sting is the answer. Let's bring him in to work Undertaker, you know, at WrestleMania. I think it would do more to hurt Sting to work Hogan than to help him.
You would rather drop to Hogan than Undertaker?
That's what I'm saying. You know,
yeah, I think, oh, my gosh. Examine your brain cells here. What's going on?
It's just the quality of the match itself as well. I mean, I don't think Sting's in a position to carry Hogan. So,
no. You
know, this is going to be pretty bad. I can remember Jim Cornette going on TV and talking about how bad, Hogan and Piper had their match. And, he talked about how Hogan had household names, but so is garbage. And it's things that he sold, too. You know, I can only imagine. I don't know. It's not the answer. It is certainly not the answer. And it's, you know, it's going to make an impact, but an impact isn't always something positive, you know.
Yeah, there's positive impacts and negative impacts, right? So
yeah.
It's going to make an impact.
Exactly.
I don't know if he tries to drop that leg, that's going to make an impact somewhere. Not a good way, I don't think, for that hip. Well, there's our thoughts overall. We discussed a lot of things WWE and TNA related. You can definitely leave us your thoughts as well. Go on to Gerwick.net. All kinds of stories up there on this wacky world of professional wrestling. As Adam always does, you know, post comments and give us some feedback on what you thought. And Adam, as always, always had a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me on the line. And I don't think we were too negative on things this time around. You know, it's always a criticism sometimes about things being negative, and it is. You summed it up perfectly. It's just the wacky world of professional wrestling, and that's just the way it is.
As we do with Jesse Ventura, we call it like we see it. Give us our thoughts. You know, so yes, as I said, you can disagree, you can agree, but that's our thoughts, and we definitely appreciate you checking out this podcast, 90 minutes plus of all the current news and professional wrestling and commentary. As always, check out www.gerwec.net, Gerwick.net for all your pro wrestling news and mixed martial arts breaking news as well. And as always, Adam, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Sounds good.